Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone with a few questions. Should we throw our resources at trying to bar the door against COVID-19 or trying to shield our most vulnerable from its sometimes deadly impact? Should we stockpile and mask ourselves or just wash our hands and go to work? Is the death rate higher than we think? Please, God, tell me it's lower.
Well, I think the 3.4% is really a false number. Now, this is just my hunch.
We don't know, because the 3.4% mortality rate brushed off by the president is the World Health Organization's calculation, derived mostly from the Chinese outbreak, which initially brought only the sickest to the regime's attention, for which it was woefully unprepared. As the New York Times reported, the doctor leading the WHO's coronavirus effort expects the rate to drop by half or more once there's more data on the infected, and leading U.S. health officials suggest it could be lower still. We just don't know. We also don't know if the task force on messaging, now led by Vice President Mike Pence, will be straight with us. On Tuesday, during one of the regular telepress briefings led by Dr. Nancy Messonnier of the CDC, someone asked whether, with the White House breathing down her neck, she could even speak freely.
As many of you know, I've been doing these telebriefings regularly since the start of this outbreak, and I think we at CDC have been very open and able to answer lots of different questions, including those posed on these conferences.
She'd been very forthright a week before when she said it was a matter of when, not if, we'd be prey to COVID-19, because it would come, and it has. 2 weeks ago, risk communication experts Peter Sandman and Jody Lenard wrote that, quote, the most crucial and overdue risk communication task for the next few days is to help people visualize their communities when keeping it out, containment, is no longer relevant. We should have gotten that message by now. Those who closely follow public health, like Science magazine staff writer John Cohen, have known it for a while.
The story begins on January 8th with a Wall Street Journal story that tells us there's a new coronavirus. That's when all of the reporters who cover infectious diseases went from, oh, there's something happening in China, to, oh, there's something happening in China. And I started communicating with Chinese scientists. It became abundantly clear that the Chinese government was not allowing their scientists to speak openly. That's not surprising. I've reported in China for many years, and I've often confronted that reality, and I'm relieved that I don't face those obstacles here. There has been a mandate to direct everything through the White House. That doesn't mean people don't speak to journalists. Of course they do. They just can't do it on the record. You can't quote them. And they're afraid of saying something that will get them in trouble. The stock market tanks. Trump very clearly was concerned. And then you start getting this robotic sort of messaging. Talking point number one.
Here intoned by Trump.
Because of all we've done, the risk to the American people remains very low.
And his VP.
The risk of infection to people in this country remains low.
That's true. And then they tell us again and again, talking point number two, we have great professionals.
Then there's talking point three, we're closing the borders.
Talking point four, we've got vaccines and treatments in the works here, overstating where they are in that pipeline. We're getting this messaging of don't panic, there's going to be a vaccine, there are going to be treatments. We don't know that. We're working on it. Science is all about going from what's possible to what's probable. But people want certainty.
How has the responsiveness of the government changed?
Brooke, you should also know that the National Association of Science Writers put out a statement calling on the Trump administration to allow government experts to speak freely. You know, the CDC made a testing kit that they sent out to public health laboratories. When those laboratories started to test drive the kits, a bunch of them said they don't work. There's a problem with one of the chemical reactions here.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to interview the same person, the laboratory scientist, and it looked like that was set up. And then the timing of this with the Pence group taking over, I get an email back where the press person answers a couple of my questions, but doesn't set up an interview. I request again, I want to speak to the scientist.
And they said no.
Nothing. In the end, I figured it out. I spoke to a lot of other people who could explain to me precisely why the CDC test had a problem. But I didn't get that from the CDC. And it's dangerous terrain. I could make a mistake more easily because I'm not speaking to the horse's mouth. I have a rule of thumb about being a journalist. Nobody owes me anything. I'm grateful that people share their time with me. But come on, I work for a publication that's widely respected and widely read around the world. Don't you want your best person speaking with me to get your message out as accurately as possible? It's baffling and it's counterproductive. We do have to be concerned about the messaging and about the fear that we create with people. That's real. I get it. But the notion that we got this one, don't worry, no problem here. Hey, how many times did Trump say nobody's died from this yet? And we all knew, all of us who covered it, we knew that was around the corner.
Everyone who was reading it knew it was around the corner.
Everyone.
Too.
So people aren't simply getting messages from the government. We're flooded with all sorts of messages. But, you know, there's a whole debate about can this be contained? And the experts I speak to are saying to me again and again, look, this is something that is going to spread widely. We may well see 20, 30, 40% of the population has been infected at some point.
Hmm.
We should do things to try to slow its spread. But can we contain it, chase it back into nature? The people I speak to who are most in the know think Pandora's box has been opened. Figure out how to live with it.
If there isn't trust in government pronouncements, doesn't this create a situation where people will be prone even more to conspiracy theories, also prone to dismissing it?
You just put your finger on it. We have top government officials who are speaking accurately and openly. Tony Fauci is a point person. He's the head of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. Tony's credible. Debbie Birx, yet another person appointed to head the task force with Pence. Bob Redfield heads the CDC. These people have all worked together for years and years, and they're credible people. There are many government voices sometimes saying very different things. That's the problem. Their reaction to that problem is, let's funnel this all down to one person with talking points. What's really necessary is for the people in the government who don't know the details to stop telling us things like, there will be a vaccine in 1 year. Stop it. Please. That's not helpful. Don't send out messages that conflict with the science.
What happens if we get these mixed messages? What's the ultimate consequence?
People lose trust in you. And then when you really need to do something that, you know, is going to be painful, they question it. If you have a trusted government saying, hey, we've got to shut down our football season, the NFL's got to shut down. I mean, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but what if you have to go there? What if you have to up the ante? I mean, remember what China did. It shut down cities. 50 million people were quarantined in Hubei province, at least. Could the U.S. government do that? Probably not, you know. But what if this were killing 50% of the people it infected? Maybe we would go to these draconian measures, right? And you have to trust your government to do that. This is serious stuff, you know, and we are very bad at gauging risk. You know, we have a law that you have to wear a seatbelt. Why do we need a law? Come on. We all know seatbelts work, but we have a law because people wouldn't wear them otherwise. They wouldn't wear motorcycle helmets otherwise. Our perceptions of risk are screwy. You know, if you ask a scientist, what's the case fatality rate of coronavirus? You're going to get a lecture. If you ask, what's the range of fatality? They'll give you the range. The range is from 0.7 to 18%. It's all
Holy
over the place.
Cow. What does that even mean?
What does it even mean? We see all these different things, and then you try to figure out, well, what's the average? What usually happens? If you look at the biggest database, China, and you look at Wuhan, the hardest hit place, the case fatality rate's like 5.7%. But Wuhan was overwhelmed. They had they had people being sent away from hospitals, waiting in line forever. They couldn't diagnose quickly enough. If you look outside of Wuhan at the rest of China, it drops to 0.7%. What that tells me is if you have really good healthcare, you detect your infection early. If you're under 80 years old and you don't have underlying heart disease, diabetes, hypertension, your risk of dying is very low.
Yeah.
It's less than 1%. But it could be that we're missing four times as many people as we are catching in terms of who's infected. Let's say, just for the sake of argument, instead of there being 90,000 people in the world with confirmed cases today, let's say there are 500,000. That changes completely the percent of people who've died.
Right. It goes way down.
Right. We probably have a good sense of how many people have died. What we don't have a good sense of is how many people have been infected. And that's how you calculate the case fatality rate. So people who aren't scientists, they get dizzy from all this, Brooke. They do. They're like, what? Just tell me the answer. And unfortunately, science rarely can give you a certain answer about things. I can tell you there is an existing flu vaccine. I'm certain about that. And I'm certain that it offers about 50% protection this year. I'm certain that if you get it, you're lowering your risk of flu and going to make it easier to determine whether you have COVID-19. I'm certain of those things. What I'm not certain about is whether you're going to get infected by flu or whether you're going to get infected by COVID-19 and what's going to happen to you. I don't know.
Well, thanks, John.
I hope that's helpful.
Very.
The risk is low, Brooke, and we've got a great team, and they're doing a great job. And the risk is low. Did I mention that? The risk is low.
John Cohen is a staff writer for Science Magazine.